This podcast is proudly sponsored by Aspire Autism Consultancy, the leading providers of autism and ADHD training, educating and enabling families, therapists, and healthcare professionals to gain knowledge and understanding of neurodiversity. The courses are written by two specialist psychotherapists and include the voices and lived experiences of neurodivergent individuals. For further details, go to www.aspireautismconsultancy.co.uk. Welcome to Different Minds, a podcast series about the different ways our brains can work and interpret information. I'm delighted to be joined by Jeff Gawthorpe to talk about ADHD. Jeff is 49, based in Yorkshire, has two children, and works in technology. Jeff has a dual diagnosis of ADHD and autism. Jeff, welcome to Different Minds.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Thank you so much for your time today. So, Jeff, the first question is, what is ADHD?
That is a good question. It's something that's very often misunderstood, and was misunderstood by myself, actually, before I realised I had it. So it's a neurodevelopmental condition, meaning it's to do with the development of the brain early on in one's life. The core symptoms are inattention, hyperactivity, and impulsiveness. So obviously we know about hyperactive kids. That's the sort of stereotype of what ADHD looks like. But we've also got inattention as a major factor, and that's where people find it very, very difficult to focus on something that they're, particularly if they're not interested in it, and it's difficult to direct the focus in the way that the person might want. And then impulsivity, this is probably one of the areas that I don't seem to suffer from as much as other people, but that's acting without having the sort of checks and balances that a person might normally place on the behaviour, blurting out something that they regret or doing something that they didn't want to do. They're the core symptoms. They are more evident in young people, children, and they do tend to sometimes diminish in severity as people get older. But for some people, like myself, they don't go away entirely. So it's often people my age will only find out when they're later on in life.
So you mentioned there that attention deficit hyperactivity disorder is a condition that affects people's behavior. Mm-hmm. And I know you alluded to that people with ADHD can seem restless, may have trouble concentrating, and may act on impulse. Maybe because of your interest in this, you don't seem to have any trouble concentrating on taking part in this interview right now.
Mm. No, probably a couple of reasons for that. Firstly, I've had my medication today, yeah. So that definitely helps. It's one of the biggest benefits of medication for me is the fact that it allows me to focus on and keep on task. But yeah, the other big factor is that I'm actually engaged and interested in this, and it's something I'm feel passionate about. So it's not difficult to place my attention on. If I'm filling in a passport application form, then it's going to be very different.
Yeah. So do you know what causes attention deficit hyperactivity disorder?
I know the research shows that it's partly genetic, maybe more than partly, but also it has some environmental factors. But I don't, as far as I know, I'm no expert, but as far as I know, there doesn't seem to be any sort of clear consensus on exactly what causes it yet.
Yeah, it's quite a complex thing, isn't it? So absolutely. So in terms of a diagnosis then, so how did yours come about? If you tell us a bit about your own story and what led you to get a formal diagnosis of ADHD.
Yeah, so I think it wasn't spotted in me when I was earlier for a couple of reasons. Firstly, it wasn't spotted back in the 1970s, early 80s. It wasn't widely known about. But I think the other factor is that I wasn't a typically impulsive child, quite hyperactive in that I fidgeted a lot, but I wasn't actually impulsive and badly behaved. So I think that sort of, it didn't show itself when I was younger. But as I got older and into my late teens and early 20s, I wasn't aware of any symptoms of ADHD, but that's when I started with all sorts of mental health problems. At some points they got really bad, and I had to drop out of university for a year and various other things. And from the age of about 20 to mid 40s, I actually didn't, I had no idea what was causing these mental health problems. There was no real reason that I could identify, but I was just plagued with constant depression, mood swings, and this would happen. Maybe I had four dips, really bad case of depression over that time. And then about 5 years ago, I was at work speaking to someone who was quite aware that I was disorganized. It was a project manager who was tasked with keeping me focused, and he sometimes had difficulty with that. And he just mentioned to me, have you ever looked into ADHD as a possible cause of why you're so disorganized? So I had no idea it could affect adults as well as kids. I knew very little about it, but after looking into the condition, a few searches on the internet, it was a revelation. I thought, that's everything. This describes my experience down to a T. So with that, I immediately thought, this is my way, hopefully, to get out of this horrible cycle of depression and everything else that I've been dealing with. So the NHS service was going to take about 9 months to get a diagnosis. So I ended up going private. And I think within about 2 or 3 weeks, I was diagnosed.
Wow. So was it a massive relief for you then, Jeff, when you got that diagnosis?
It was, but it was also, it's difficult to explain. I also felt a lot of shock and even sort of grief at at what I'd missed when I was younger and what I might have been able to achieve, and how easier my life would have been if I'd have known about this earlier on.
Yeah.
So it was a huge relief. And the fact that I might be able to get treatment for it that would make it better was, fantastic. But I did feel this sort of pang for what might have been. It was took a while to get over, actually.
Yeah. And were you diagnosed with autism at a similar time, Jeff, or was that a different time in your life?
So that was about, I think, 18 months after. So I enrolled in a trial at Sheffield University where someone was, for a PhD project, they were performing EEGs of people with ADHD and autism. And there was a screening test at the beginning that you had to fill in. And mine was overwhelmingly showing that I was autistic, even though I've never been diagnosed. So that made me think. And I did a few more tests online. And everyone came back with pretty positive for autism. So I thought, I've got a checkup with my psychiatrist in a few weeks. And I mentioned it to him. And I knew straight away when I mentioned it to him that, yeah, I probably do have it, because his eyes lit up. I think he'd been wanting to maybe speak to me about it, but not knowing how to.
Yeah.
And he referred me then to the Autism Diagnosis Service in Leeds. And the rest is history. I got diagnosed about a couple of months later.
Right, yeah. So just going back to the ADHD then, Jeff. So we've talked about symptoms and possible causes, and obviously we talked about the diagnosis process. What about treatment for ADHD? Can you tell us a bit about that?
The good thing about ADHD is that it's one of the most treatable psychiatric conditions. Treatments are really effective and they're well tolerated by most people. The normal route that someone would go down would be to use stimulant medication. So methylphenidate, I think, is the first choice, usually. That's known as Ritalin, or was known as Ritalin. And then there's also amphetamine, dexamphetamine, or a longer acting one called lisdexamfetamine. But they all basically do the same thing. They increased levels of neurotransmitters in the brain that helps you with the focus, reduces impulsivity, helps you relax and makes you less hyperactive as well. And there are also other drugs as well that are non-stimulants, but I think they're very much seen as sort of only to be used if stimulants can't be used for any reason. I don't think they tend to be as quite as effective, not for the core symptoms anyway. So with my own treatment, we went for methylphenidate first. That didn't agree with me. I found it was quite harsh on the system. It brought me quite up quite quickly to an agitated state and then would drop out really quickly and leave me depressed. And I know that's something that a few people have told me. So we then moved to amphetamine, so lisdexamfetamine, which is a long-acting one. And yeah, it's been brilliant. I never looked back, really.
And would you say that ADHD can be treated using medicine and therapy as well, or a combination of both?
So I think there's limited therapy that types of therapy that will work, and definitely therapy that will help with the sort of associated conditions of anxiety and depression, etc. But to help with the core impulsivity, hyperactivity, and inattention issues, they're more to do with the hardware of the brain. So the way I look at it is that if you go for counselling and you're able to moderate your behaviour through counselling, you're basically changing the software that your brain runs on. With ADHD, the problem is that the hardware has already been pre-configured. And so even if you try and change the software on top through counselling, behaviour modification, it can only go so far. As far as I'm aware, I don't think there are many very good treatments for ADHD that involve therapy, not for the core symptoms anyway.
Was it a big decision for you then to take a stimulant medication?
No. I was overjoyed that there was something available. It was my light at the end of the tunnel, something that might, put an end to sort of 20 years of misery, really.
I wondered if you could talk to us a bit more about living with ADHD and kind of some of the coping mechanisms that you perhaps might have.
Yeah, so I suppose I should say that sometimes it's difficult to know where the autism ends and where ADHD begins, because it's very, ADHD and autism are misunderstood in that they're very close together in a lot of ways. Yeah. And there's a crossover in quite a lot of the symptoms. It's quite clear that my ADHD problems are my inability to focus and inability to stay restful. I'm always fidgeting, as you can probably tell. And so with those issues, I try to modify my environment. So headphones on when I'm working, playing white noise or something like that. I'll wear comfortable clothes so I'm not fidgeting, feeling uncomfortable. I'll keep the room temperature nice and cool, how I like it, and just make things as comfortable as possible so I'm not actually having to be distracted by thoughts about this and that or the other. And that's how I deal with work. With sort of personal life and sort of household management and that sort of thing, it's not quite as easy. One of the biggest problems I find is that my lack of attention leads to me losing all sorts of things all the time. So this includes things like if I'm working on something, I've got an electric guitar and I'm currently rewiring it. The bits that I've got for the guitar, I've lost about three of them already, even though I only got them a couple of days ago. And it will be the case that I will have a switch that I want to put in it. I will turn around, go for my soldering iron, and the switch is nowhere to be seen.
Yeah.
It's literally nowhere. And it will turn up in the most obscure place. And it's done completely with unconsciously on my part. So I don't actually know I'm doing it. And I think that's one of the biggest problems for me. It's losing things or forgetting about important things that need to be done noticing something, or you appear to be noticing something that someone tells you, or you see on the TV or read or whatever, but it just goes in one ear and out the other.
I guess what's interesting, Jeff, is, you know, yes, you have these challenges, but you are obviously such a positive role model, essentially, because you have a successful career and you manage your job and you have children and, you know, you have your own life as well. So, you know, I guess, you know, yes, you have your challenges, but obviously you are also living a successful life as well.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at it, it's two main areas. My career is definitely more successful than my personal life, in that my ADHD and autistic traits seem to benefit me to a great degree in my job. I work with designing computer systems, cloud computer systems. I've worked in software and engineering for 20 odd years, and I'm very good at it, and I'm good at it because I love it. I find that quite easy. What's difficult is dealing with the things that, yeah, I'm not interested in. So I've got two girls, but I was divorced about 10 years ago, mainly because of my neurodiversity and the fact that my wife didn't really understand where I was coming from. I didn't understand where she was coming from. And apparently divorce is rife within the ADHD community. So I've had people say this to me before, that you seem successful, and in a way maybe, but in the bits that matter, probably not as successful as I would like to be. It's my sort of personal life where I can't keep it together as much.
Yeah. So you mentioned your family there and your two girls, and you mentioned that also, was it one of your daughters was going through an ADHD diagnosis themselves?
Yeah. So my eldest daughter, she's in sixth form at the moment. And during the sort of later stages of lockdown, when she's had to do mostly self-directed study, she found it really difficult to cope. Really difficult to motivate herself to get on with the things that she needs to do. And ever since she's been a small child, she's found it very difficult to concentrate, and always just been staring into the distance, daydreaming, etc. So there was always, a sort of a suspicion on my part that she might have it once I knew I had ADHD. Over the last few months, as the studying has got harder, she struggled more, and it got to a point where I thought, I need to be honest with myself. I was trying to deny to myself that she might have ADHD because I didn't want to think she'd be going through the same problems that I used to go through. But I had to be honest with myself and be brave and think the most important thing is to help her. And the only way I can do that is by being honest with myself and with her. So we spoke about it. She's been in tears as well, you know, and very upset that she can't get working on time, etc. And it's been really difficult to see. So when I spoke to her about it, it was a big relief that she was really keen on sort of going forward and getting tested. So at the moment, she's waiting for an assessment. We've had to go private because of the waiting time. And I think she's got the first meeting in about 2 weeks.
Right.
So, hopefully we'll take it from there.
So that's really good. And I guess, as you suggested there, I guess ultimately caring for a child with ADHD obviously can be challenging.
Any parent will be able to identify with the feeling that you always want better for your children. And yeah, if you did have a difficult childhood, are you being bullied or being excluded and that sort of thing? The worst thing in the world is to see your own child going through it. Yeah. And I found it one of the most difficult things I've dealt with in a long time, to see my daughter going through this and struggling and crying and being frustrated. And I just needed to be honest with myself, and hopefully it's going to get better from now on. But yeah, it can be really difficult and quite heartbreaking.
Yeah. Well, I hope all the best for your daughter. So, Jeff, I wonder if you could just tell us a bit more about, the daily reality of living with ADHD.
Yeah, there are certain facets of it that are not much known about and are not even recognized in the DSM diagnostic criteria. And one of these particularly is emotional instability, fluctuations in mood, and these can be quite severe. And I know myself, these sometimes happened over an hour or two or a day or two. And I also used to have difficulty with longer periods of mood swings. So it'd be also almost hypomanic for a couple of days or 4 days. And then I'd feel depressed and would sort of crash for 3 or 4 days. And the various things like this that are not recognized as widely recognized as symptoms, but do affect people badly. And I've got to say a big thank you to my psychiatrist, who was brave enough. I was so fed up of feeling these mood swings, actually, that I suggested I go on these ketamine trials, where you know, you go sit on a bed and receive a ketamine infusion. So that pricked his eyebrows up, and I could see he wasn't that keen on it, but he suggested trying a drug that isn't prescribed for ADHD. It's called lamotrigine, and it's a mood stabilizer that's usually used for people with bipolar disorder, and it worked wonders. I'm so grateful to him, because he had the foresight and the courage to, you know, suggest a drug that isn't normally prescribed for ADHD, but it's helped enormously with my mood and completely banished any signs of mood swings that I used to get. I just don't get them anymore.
Right.
And it's made an enormous difference to my life. And I think that's an important thing that I'd like to sort of stress to people that are a bit of a loss, even if they've been diagnosed. You just because you're not finding the right treatment yet doesn't mean you won't. And I think it's important to sort of keep plugging away and asking your doctors and your psychiatrists and other specialists, is there anything else you could try? Because in my instance, there was, and it did me wonders. So, you know, hopefully that sort of thing might help someone else.
So, Jeff, is it true that often people with ADHD can experience a pain which is triggered by, I guess, the perception that a person has been rejected or criticized by someone important in their life?
Yeah, absolutely. It's very common within ADHD. The specific term for it is rejection sensitive dysphoria. In reality, it's a sense of feeling hugely badly affected by rejection by, you know, anyone. You might know them, you might not. It can be so serious for me, particularly. It can make me feel physically ill. It's really difficult to deal with, and it's very, very common in ADHD. The impact on my life, for instance, is that I'm 49 years old and I've never asked a woman out on a date. I just couldn't face being rejected. That would kill me. And I know many other people feel like that. So interestingly, there's some research that shows that particular type of non-stimulant drug can actually help with rejection sensitive dysphoria, but I don't know much about it. But hopefully that might help some people. But I know it's a really, really painful problem.
I want to talk, Jeff, about an article that you published for ADHD Action. And I know in that you mentioned that the human cost of undiagnosed ADHD is incalculable. You know, the broken families, the suicides, the careers lost, the unhappy lives and the unmet potentials. And you went on to say this alone should be sufficient for society and our government to start treating ADHD with the priority it deserves. And I know from your own personal journey, it took a long time for you to get the support that you needed.
It's a bit of a bugbear of mine. And this is why I try and help whenever I can. I enroll in studies. I take part in the panel discussions for Aspire Consultancy, the training sessions. and this podcast, obviously. And I do that just to try and raise awareness of ADHD and the impact that it can have on people's lives and how important it is for it to be noticed by someone, at least. Shockingly, there's so many GPs that have no idea about adult ADHD. I see them on the courses that I speak on. And the fact that I went to my doctors, I mean, I even saw a psychiatrist when I had my first proper depressive episode. I completely fell apart. I saw a psychiatrist for some time. He had no idea about ADHD, obviously, or autism. Since then, I must have been to the doctors, I don't know, probably 100 times over 20 years with, you know, symptoms of ADHD, restlessness, inability to sleep, anxiety, treatment-resistant depression. And not once did any of the GPs even suggest that it might be, there might be an underlying cause to all those sort of psychological problems, which is shocking in itself. But I know there are even psychiatrists who have little to no knowledge of ADHD as a condition, which is, it's pretty mind-boggling that we don't, you know, it's surely not acceptable that GPs and specialists are not fully aware of such a prevalent condition, and a condition that causes so much harm and heartache. It's such a difficult 20 years for me going through all that, and that must be multiplied hundreds of thousands of times across the country from people that haven't been diagnosed. So yeah, it's something that I'm really passionate about, and I'd like to see change. There's not enough awareness, and especially with the people that matter.
Absolutely. I wondered if you had any advice, Jeff, to anyone out there that's perhaps listening to this podcast and maybe they thinking they might have ADHD, but they're not sure where to turn.
I would say, first of all, you know, try your GP, but before you go to your GP, be prepared. If you think you've got ADHD, do some questionnaires from, reputable sources. There are various places online where you can get these sorts of things. Research it yourself, find about all the signs and the symptoms, make a list of everything that you want to talk to the doctor about, and take it with you, and then present them with this evidence. Make it clear to them that there is something going on and you want this to be investigated. And I think that's with the doctors that aren't as fully aware as of ADHD, I think that's the only way you can do it. Present them with enough evidence and make a compelling enough argument to get them to sit up and listen. But then, of course, there may be people that aren't assertive enough, that don't have the educational background, etc., that don't feel confident or are able to do that, and it doesn't help them. So it's not a one-size-fits-all fix, but I would just say, don't hesitate. Make sure you follow it through, because if it turns out you maybe do have ADHD and you receive treatment, it could be the biggest decision you ever make.
I know often when it comes to neurodivergent conditions, sometimes in society we focus on the deficits rather than the strengths. Would you say you have any gifts given the fact you have ADHD?
Yeah, I mean, I think the fact that I've got a racing mind that never stops is not all that, you know, altogether negative. It is largely negative, but I find that I come up with far more ideas than other people, off-the-cuff ideas, and typically puns and things like this that my mind just identifies, and I'll just blurt it out. So it does enable me as well to, I think it's probably this and the autism, it enables me to draw lines between information and data that other people might not see. So quite often I will spot, when I'm being shown a presentation, I'll spot a flaw in the numbers that even the presenter hasn't thought about. And they just pop out and are obvious to me, and my mind's just racing through them. And I know that doesn't happen with other people. So that, I suppose, is a positive. And the fact that my mind never rests means that I never stop needing information. So I'll never be just sat there not doing anything with my mind. I'll be reading. I'll be mostly reading, but maybe watching some documentary on the TV. I just seem to have this thirst for mental stimulation and knowledge that is never ending. But that obviously leads to you doing a lot of reading, so that can't be bad either.
Absolutely. And I'm also detecting a pretty good sense of humour there, Jeff, as well. So I guess that would also be a gift of yours.
Yeah, I know a lot of people say that I've got a good sense of humour. I think I might mention in the article there that when I went on holiday with a few people that had not met me before, they asked if they could take me away again and hire me next time. So keep them insane.
You'll have to let us know you at the end of the podcast, definitely. So Jeff, I want to ask you a question that I ask all my guests on the Different Minds podcast series. And that is, what advice, if you had chance, would you offer your younger self?
I would say, believe in yourself. Don't let the slights from other people or the backhanded comments from teachers or anything that affects your self-confidence and self-belief, try not to let it affect you, because in the end, it will turn out that those things that have been taken fun of, etc., they're not your problems, they're other people's problems. And it's so hard to have the vision and awareness as a young person that's how things really are. But yeah, the biggest thing I would say, the most important thing, would be to believe in yourself and not listen to any doubters.
Absolutely. Jeff, it's been such a pleasure speaking to you today. Genuinely really enjoyed interviewing you, and ultimately your life story is very moving, and as I said before, you are obviously a positive role model for what you've achieved in your life, and it's great the work that you're doing to raise awareness and understanding of ADHD. And all I have to say is, yeah, keep up the good work.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.